Gillespie. We're talking about a science that not too many people know about, but we certainly have a studio full of people who do know about it. And if you have some questions, you're invited to get in on it. And I do believe that we have Lloyd on the line. Lloyd, you want to build one of these machines?
Yes, sir. I'd like to try that. It's very exciting, I think.
I think it is.
Where do I start? I'd like to get schematics or something.
Well, we have John Bedini here, and he has given the basic information to that into the public domain. And, John, you might as well tell him how to get that.
All right. You get the... to study the waves... You get the first book, which takes you through... What I was hoping was that, like I explained at the conference the other day, that everybody would catch on to these waves. In other words, what I was hoping was that people would pick up right away that there was a difference in the two waves, and that's how you were getting the energy. The generator, first of all, is it's a very simple thing to do. I must say simple in its construction. However, in its tuning, it's very difficult.
I can imagine.
I don't know, you know, what your background is.
I worked as an aircraft worker way back in the 30s, right on through, and I have my own shop. Tuned on, but I'm not so much in the electronic field, but I can get probably all the help I need.
Well, I think perhaps, John, one of the best things he can do is to get the
book,
the paper that you and you have put out, and Ike Mueller. There's two, really.
Where can I...
Let me give you the address for those, and certainly John is not in the business of selling booklets, but I want you to get that information. It is the Tesla Book Company.
How's that spelled?
Tesla. You know who Nikola Tesla was?
Tesla.
T-E-S-L-A. Tesla Book Company. 1580 Magnolia.
1580
Magnolia.
Magnolia.
And that's in Millbrae, California. M-I-L-L-B-R-A-E, or is it E-A? A-E. 94030. And just ask for the John Ratzliff up there for the two books about the Bedini device. They are two papers, actually. They're scientific papers.
I didn't get that town. Millbrae,
M-I-L-L-B-R-A-E. And if you missed that, we have that address on file here for you at Broadcast Information.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now...
And I can call in if I...
You certainly can, certainly. Mm-hmm. Just call KABC and ask for Broadcast Information. They'll give you the address. In that, I think, is enough information for you to get started. There's six or seven of the machines that are working in the Los Angeles area from that.
Yeah.
I'm located over in Alhambra, South El Monte, really.
So you'll be able to do it. I hope that'll help you, Lloyd.
Bill, there is one more important thing.
Yes.
If you have a problem with the electronics, in other words, for the controller, Bedini Electronics builds that. And that's $95 retail, okay?
Yeah, the cost is, I imagine, is minimum.
Well, yeah, but it's very important that your phasing's right. See, a lot of people jump right into the machine and think that they're going to make this thing run, and then they run into phasing problems.
I am quite aware of it. It's very technical.
Yeah, so...
Well, it's a good way to get started, Lloyd, and then John try to help you out from there. But to find out that it does happen, it's a new science, and if you're going to get in there and fiddle with it, we think that's great.
Yes, well I understand there's someone in East Los Angeles that is working on one.
Well,
right?
They're all over.
Uh-huh.
There's many people.
Many people are doing it. It is a reality. Okay, Lloyd?
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you for being
Bye.
A part of it.
Bye.
We're talking free energy tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. Glad to have you aboard. Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins, and with me is Tom Bearden, Ike Mueller, John Bedini, Steve Wirth. Professor Ramon Sanchez just joined us, and we're talking about a lot of brain power here. If you want to talk about scalar interferometry, all of these free energy. I could use the terms, guys, but I don't know what it means. But there are a lot of people out there that do, and I think that... who wanted to talk to us here? Gus, I think, is on the line. Gus, welcome aboard.
Yes, good evening, Bill.
Yes.
My question is basically, I want to ask Mr. Bearden, if he could possibly explain the difference between the John Newman device and Mr. Bedini's device. Is that possible?
Yes, of course, I have never seen Newman's device personally.
But you have an idea about it.
But my idea of it, I think, is best summed up the way John said it. His device produces torque, you know, which we're talking about a magnetic effect.
Yes.
John's device produces electricity directly in the load itself. In other words, if you take the load of the latest Bedini device.
Yes.
And if you isolate that as a subsystem, and you... If you use normal electromagnetic instruments to measure what's going in, you get almost zero going in. Very little ordinary electricity going into it. Now, there's a lot of the other kind of electricity going into it that doesn't show on your normal instrument. In the load itself, the unusual electricity is turned into usual electricity. And so it then produces ordinary power, ordinary energy, and ordinary electrical energy. So they're two quite different machines with two quite different effects and two quite different concepts.
I see. Is there
they both are any... doing the job, by the way.
I'm sorry?
And they both are real, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And I believe Newman will get a patent on his machine. I believe he's the court...
Yes.
Ruled very strongly in his favor and has essentially stated that there's absolutely no reason the patent shouldn't be granted him because the machine does operate.
We got to remember that since the turn of the century, it's been impossible to get a patent on a free energy device because the powers that be did not want you and me to have free energy. And that was one of the ways they stopped it.
And before we leave that, let's address that question. You're never going to get free energy as long as your system stays linear, as long as you don't change space-time somewhere or another. In other words, as long as you have to put in as much as you get out, you're never going to get free energy. Now, I'll say something a little technical, say it real quick, and then shut up.
Okay.
If you bend space-time locally, if in the machine itself you are warping space-time, you're now in general relativity. Now, in general relativity, when you have such a situation, if you bend it one way, that machine will look like it's got a hidden source. Now, this is real. This is not fictitious. This is ordinary general relativity.
Yes.
And it will produce energy that you can draw from it. Now, it'll take it from somewhere else in the universe. But it's like having waves bring energy to you out of the ocean. They come from somewhere, but they come free to you. And you can do that. If you bend it the other way, it'll look like it's got a sink. It will soak up energy. And energy will disappear into it. And that'll give you, around it, you'll see it giving a cooling effect.
Is there any conflict, like when Mr. Newman gets his patent, will there be any conflict, like someone coming up with all these free energy devices?
I think what you're going to see is probably the biggest barrier we have is in our mindset. We have been told so long that you can't violate conservation of energy, and that's nonsense. You can do it in any local general relativistic system. Every virtual state interaction violates conservation of energy, and that's already in the textbook. So, you know, that's a bunch of nonsense. In ordinary physics, you can already violate the conservation of energy law. There are several other cases that are already recognized as violating it. All you have to do is be clever enough to tap one of nature's mechanisms that she's already given to you. And I think that once this mindset is overcome, you're going to see all kinds of people building all kinds of free energy devices. And I hope John Bedini is going to build about 10 of them.
Yeah, there will be a lot of free energy devices out there. It'll be a very, very competitive situation, I think, in a very short period of time once people realize they can do it. And they better realize it because there are a lot of people doing it already. The physicists who tell you that it cannot be done just happen to be dead wrong. And get that in your mind and understand that. They are wrong.
No good physicist is going to tell you that you can't build a free energy system if you tell him that you've been able to warp space-time on the laboratory bench. If he tells you can't do it after you've done that, he doesn't know physics.
Does that help you, Gus?
Sure does.
All right.
Sure
thank does. You very much for your good question.
Thank you,
I'm Bill.
Bill
Jenkins. We're talking open mind. We're talking about a science that a lot of the scientists would tell you doesn't exist, but, you know, that's what this program is all about anyway. A lot of brain power to talk to you about free energy tonight. Free energy. Your ability to tap all of the energy you will ever need for whatever you want to do, and it's not going to cost you anything. That science is here. It's online. And to help discuss that with me is Tom Bearden, Ike Mueller, John Bedini, Steve Wirth, and Ramon Sanchez. And if anybody knows about those things, these gentlemen do. And we have Richard on the line who wants to talk to us about financing these devices. Richard, what's on your mind?
Good evening, Bill. Couple of questions. The last phrase you used were the ordinary physicists were dead wrong.
Whenever they say you can't develop a free energy device, which many of them say.
That's right. I have been working on one, and I'm afraid that I may be dead right. Exxon might not like it.
Isn't that too bad?
Yes, but how do your gentlemen consultants deal with the possibility that this is not going to be popular with the economic powers that be?
The other word, Ilnet, is isn't that too bad? Here's the most important group of people in the world, and the most powerful group of people in the world is not Exxon and the rest of it. It is the American public.
I totally agree, sir.
The aroused American public. Now, when the American public begins to understand that free energy is here, no longer are we going to see the days of J.P. Morgan and the rest of them where the large corporations and the bankers and the rest of them can sweep it under the carpet. It just will not be allowed to happen. Nobody cares. And we don't care about Exxon or the rest of them if they're going to try to deny you and me and the American people their right to have free energy. Now, media will certainly get into the fray. And as we said at town hall the other night, if any politician, if any bureaucrat, if any large corporation tries in any way to thwart the development and the distribution of free energy to the people of the United States, their name, rank, serial number, photograph, telephone number, and address will become a household word in every home in America. And what are you going to do about them, America? And I'll tell you what you're going to do, what they will do about them real fast. Well, I don't need to. I think you can see it.
I appreciate your strong comeback. Will we have their fingerprints also?
Well, we'll take those if it's necessary, but they will not be able to stop it.
Because I have been holding back, perhaps in a paranoiac imagination, of being one person that comes up with something and Texaco is out of business. Except for petrochemicals.
Well, you're not going to put the oil companies out of business. There are great many uses for petroleum products other than to burn them and ruin the ecology of our planet. We're at a critical point on that. But by the proper use of petroleum products, we can make millions of acres of arid land fertile again. We can provide homes, clothing, shelter, food, medical needs. There's a myriad of uses for petroleum products other than ruining our environment.
I totally agree, sir. A few technical questions for your gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about manipulating current mechanical devices, or are we talking about tapping into essentially etheric energy?
Well, the word etheric energy, if you'll substitute for that scalar electromagnetics, it's exactly the same thing. It's actually the ether. But it's a little bit different ether than they used to have in the old ether theory. By the way, ether is now an accepted concept again. It is now used in physics again. It's used in the sense that Einstein proposed it. It's used as applying to the vacuum, which is considered to be a flux of virtual particles. It's a funny little gas, in other words,
right,
that instead of being material, the little particles appear and disappear. Very rapidly, so rapidly that each one can't be detected. But between them all, they have a high pressure. So the vacuum has become a new kind of ether. The difference is it's not filled with particles like a normal gas that stay around all the time. The little particles are appearing and disappearing all the time.
Is the flux measurable?
Yes.
Okay, I'm on the right track. I'm working in totally different lines than you folks.
Oh, that's great, Richard, because there are a lot of lines to work on, and the more people that work on them, the more people that bring it out into the open, the greater it is.
Could I ask a question of Steve real quickly?
Sure.
When it comes time to get off the drawing board and onto the breadboard, and I admire you folks that have, where do I go to find the man that can put the mechanics behind the idea?
Well, you're talking to one.
Well, you go to any machine shop where it has machines, and what's good about it, you don't have to use no exotic metals. All the metals we use is brass, steel, and aluminum.
There's one more. I'm working with Monell.
Yeah. But
no problem?
No problem there. But you definitely have to use brass or aluminum. It will not work.
I'd like to know why, if you have a moment.
Well, it affects a magnetic field, and the magnetic field works entirely different than the magnetic field we're normally to understand. And that brass bar has a lot to do with any current, if I am mistaken, on the magnetic field when the bars have a dead short.
Uh-huh.
And the trick is you have to know somebody who knows how to wind them coils for you on the bars. And it's really, you can do them by hand. That's the way we first made them.
I'm not going to wind, sir.
You're not going to wind?
No, sir.
You ought to see some of the whining these guys do.
I've been listening for an hour and a half, and I can imagine going 32 wire times whatever it takes for a coil. But this is direct.
With a 5 miles of wire in one of those coils?
No.
That's very interesting.
I have a very good idea. I know what he's going to do, but he's not going to use any coils.
Oh,
he's not going to. He's going to tap a completely different source, but done.
It's the same principle. Source.
Yeah, it's the same source.
Oh, right. You're going to do the same.
You're going to just utilize a different principle.
Yes, sir.
Okay, it's the same thing in the end.
Right.
And you will find the same breakdown problems as if you wound the coils.
Oh, really?
Yes. I already went that one.
They've already tried that. They've already tracked down that trail.
Yeah,
that's a disaster I haven't encountered yet.
No, well, you know, anything that's on anything that's theoretical off the computer or laid out on a piece of paper, you never know that if you put a piece of wax paper in between something, that some little spark's going to jump through and short out your condenser, right?
Right.
But the thing about this is that we found the most stable of the units was by winding the coils.
Mm-hmm.
Because, see, then we could control the wire size on the rotors. We did it very crudely. The wire that's on the rotors, by the way, is a number 18. Now, when Steve talks about brass, iron, and aluminum, these are all intricate machined parts. Like the rotors are iron, the center shaft is brass. It's a very important thing to remember that you don't want to disrupt this field when you make the two patterns.
I don't want to disrupt it. I want to manipulate it.
Okay, well, that's right. But you want to manipulate it into doing work for you, okay?
Right.
You don't want to manipulate it into soaking up energy that you can't use. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Follow it.
But you're on the right track. That's the starting point right there, is with no coils and those three metals.
All right, Richard, does that help you?
One quick...
Make it real quick.
How to finance this. There is a public law that if you have a generator in your backyard, you can run it back through your utility lines, and the company has to pay you for it.
Yes, and the utility companies hate that because they may have a man working on the line out there and you're running electricity back into it.
Can I say one thing, Bill?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have a very good friend down the street from me who spent a lot of money on wind turbines, okay? Now, the nice thing about the Department of Water and Power is that they'll buy your electricity back, okay? But they're going to recharge you for that electricity at full cost. In other words, they're going to pay nothing for it. You're going to do the work. You're going to spend the $10 million or whatever it costs to put up your machine. You're never going to get paid back for it. You just cannot do it. You know, take wind generators as an example. Those people have never been paid off. They'll in 30 years, if they're lucky, they're going to break even. You see, they allow you to have all these things. The best thing you could do, sir, is to generate your own power and forget about selling it to them.
Also, what's interesting about this particular device we're talking about, the power it generates is the power you ask for, and it doesn't generate any extra. So if you're not going to be feeding the Department of Water and Power anyway.
the Department of Water and Power ask for all the power they can get. If you can shove it back through their lines, why won't they pay you?
Well, why shove it into them if you're going to have to pay for it back again at
full price?
You know, that doesn't make too much sense.
No, if I shove 10,000 kilowatts and use 1,000, I've got a 9,000 plus.
Well, if you want to try to feed them, but that isn't the idea of this. The idea is to make your home
energy independent. The idea of this is to pay for the research and development.
Well, here's the nice thing, Bill. There's one important thing that he hasn't discovered yet. You will not shove that energy which you are generating back into their lines because it's an absolute fight with that energy. In other words, their energy is not the same type as yours.
Right. I have to negate theirs to put mine in.
No.
No?
No, you're going to have to negate yours to put yours in there because yours is a different type of energy. It's not as simple as chopping off the peaks and then sending it back down the line, okay?
Okay.
I mean, so if you've got that concept in your mind, that's wrong right there.
Whoops.
Okay, and another thing, you're gonna severely heat their transformers.
Well, that's their problem.
Well, that's true.
That's right, but it's your problem in the end. And the taxpayers' problem when they got to replace that transformer on the pole.
There's another thing to bring in mind, that particular law that's on the books in the state of California was put on the books by a bunch of legislators that didn't understand physics, don't know anything about physics at all, and I can assure you that will be changed. They will be educated in Sacramento here in a very short period of time as to what is happening in the world of science and where politics and science don't often get along.
Oh, if any one of us could put 3 million kW into the line, it would be changed overnight.
Yeah, and there would be some transformers blown up along the way. So that
Bill, thank
it.
You very much.
All right, thank you, Richard.
I enjoyed the advice and your conversation.
All right, good to have you aboard, and get out there and keep going.
I'm
Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind tonight. We're talking free energy, and there are a lot of things about it. Stay with. It's Free Bearden, John Bedini, Steve Wirth, Ike Mueller, Ramon Sanchez are all here. And within that, there are a lot of people who know a great deal about this thing called free energy. All of the energy you can use that you'll ever need. And after you buy the device and to maintain it, it's not going to cost you anything. Now, I know it may sound technical to you from time to time, but I think it'll be well worth your time to stay with and find out more about this reality. It isn't a dream. It is here. It is now. And we have Faith on the line. Hello, Faith.
Hello, Bill. Mm-hmm. The two gentlemen before me come in with part of my questions that I wanted to ask these men. I feel proud to be able to even speak to gentlemen that are doing something for the world, as they are doing.
They certainly are, I think.
I wanted to know, like this gentleman said about the company buying it, what happened, they wouldn't let them have it. Back in 1927... they do like this now. In 1927, my brother was working in the Ford agency. They had a carburetor that was testing out for the Ford Motor Company.
Mm-hmm.
That carburetor, the car was on a new car. It was sold and wasn't, they didn't know anything about that carburetor on it, the fellow that sold it. The fellow drove that to San Diego, drove it around a week, drove back up here, and drove back down again, and he hadn't used a fourth of a tank of gas. That carburetor was taken. I had to give him $10,000 and give him a new car for that to get that carburetor back.
Well, that's true. Those things used to happen in the corporate system. The corporations would buy up technological advances, and particularly if it dealt with energy and dealt with the petroleum industry. But those days are gone. It will not happen again.
Pardon me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, this, when they get it on the market, so we people like ourselves, I have a brother that lives up in the mountains,
mm-hmm.
and the electricity goes out on them part of the time there.
Mm-hmm.
Would one of these work in the mountains like that way?
It'll work anywhere.
It'll work anywhere.
Yes, it will.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for letting me ask that.
Well,
interesting.
I really understand. A lot of people have the idea that the big companies won't let it happen, or the government or somebody, they won't let it happen. They are not going to be able to do that anymore, so don't worry about it.
I think that's marvelous.
Okay. Thank you very
much. Okay. Thank you very much.
And we have Mark on the line. Hello, Mark.
How do you do?
All right.
Good. First question is, you were telling us at the beginning that different laws or the way we were taught earlier is wrong. I'd like to know what theories would still exist today or what theories still apply.
Oh, there are a bunch of them that apply, and I will let Tom get to that in just a second, but we want to take a break, Mark. Can you stay right there?
Okay, yes.
Okay, very good. Mark, now, Sorry to break your chain of thought there, but let's get into it before we have to take a break, will you? Tom, do you want to answer that question?
Well, we'll have a cut at it. Let's say what a law of nature really is. Nature has no hard and fixed laws. What we do is we describe a general situation as general as we can, and we, so to speak, fix all the variables. And then as long as that thing stays linear and well-behaved and doesn't vary very much from what we're talking about, this particular law that we discover, which is usually written as a mathematical formula, it applies in that situation. Now, conservation of energy, for example, is such a law, and there are many others. Conservation of momentum, for example. Yet there are many cases where conservation of momentum does not apply. If you change the assumptions that are in that general situation that that law is written for, then you violate the law. In other words, the law doesn't apply. A new law or a variation of that law applies. What we're talking about here is we change the most basic thing that we know about, and that's space-time. Everything exists in that, the way we conceive it. So if we start being able to change pattern, form, shape, space-time itself at will, then literally you have the ability to change any law, and I mean that literally. We're seeing right now, and some things that we cannot talk about on the air, that that is a fact. It is not conjecture. It is experimental fact. You can change some of the most revered laws of nature by simply changing the basic assumptions that they were written for. When you do that, you don't have to obey those kinds of things anymore.
Mark, does that help you out there? Hello? Well, I hope that answered the question there with Mark. Not all of the laws of physics are wrong, but what we want to do is throw out the ones that don't apply, keep the ones that do apply, add the new ones that really apply. And there's a mixture to be had there. We're talking about free energy tonight. It is real. It is with us. And we have another hour to discuss it with you, with some of the leading minds in the world on that particular subject. So stay with us.
Happy celebration, 25.
Welcome into Hour 3 of Open Mind on a Saturday night on KABC. I'm Bill Jenkins, and this Saturday night we're talking about something that's very important to you and will hit close to home. Your ability to have free access to all of the electrical energy you need. And it isn't going to cost you anything. Sound interesting? Well, we've had an interesting 2 hours. Join us for the last one here. And to help us along our way in that conversation are some people who know probably more about that than anyone else in the world. We have Tom Bearden with us, John Bedini, who hasn't actually made the device, and it's there, Stephen Wirth, who puts all of these great ideas together. We have Ike Mueller and Ramon Sanchez, and you're certainly welcome to talk to any of these men about how you are going to get the energy that it's your right to have. There's no reason that you should be paying all this vast amount of money for it. And it's online and coming your way. And let's talk to Reza. Reza, hello. Hello. Have we got telephones in there? Okay, let me try to punch ahead. Reza, are you with us? Well, now, let me see. Are our telephone lines working? Hello there. I believe we are now.
Hello.
Yes.
Good evening, Bill.
Uh-huh.
Great show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I guess I have a simple question. I don't understand some of the terminologies that has been used,
mm-hmm.
but I want to know how the system is hooked up together. And now let me tell you my understanding of how electrical energy is produced. What I know is you have an engine, internal combustion engine, like that turns a generator, and that generator produces energy. How does Bedini's machine compare to this, and where is that extra energy, or whatever you want to call it, produced?
Good question, and your understanding is pretty well correct for the way it was yesterday, but we're now talking about today and tomorrow. So put aside all of those ideas, and we'll let John talk to you. John?
Okay.
Now, let's go over this question a little bit. First of all, our generator doesn't use a gasoline-powered engine, okay?
Okay.
What you are referring to is a standard electrical generating system with potential drag, right?
Okay.
Am I correct? That's what you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I can't go into all the details on how the generator's put together, but I can tell you of some experiments that were done that might help you. First of all, we have generators which run themselves with their own motor action, and then we have generators which use an electrical motor to drive the generator, and as we draw from the generator, the generator speeds up instead of slowing down. Okay, now conventional generation equipment is that you hook the light bulb to the generator, the gasoline engine slows down, and then you have to give the engine more gasoline to bring it back up so that you're back up to the right frequency again.
Okay.
In this generator, we run it approximately 59 cycles, almost 60 cycles, plus minus 10%, okay? And when we load down our generator, the motor speeds up. In other words, we reduce the power input. Now, knowing this, if we had it hooked to a gasoline generator, what we would be doing is throttling the gasoline generator down. We'd be burning less fuel for power output in kilowatts that the generator is going to put out. You understand what I'm saying?
It looks like in conventional, or as Bill says, yesterday systems, we have loss of energy in whatever terms, thermal or otherwise, and in this system we have creation of energy along the line somewhere.
Right. The losses of energy in the conventional generator are that you're cutting those magnetic lines of force, so you're creating drag and heat. In other words, you're creating heat at one end to power the generator, and you're creating heat at the other end to get the electricity out of the generator. Okay?
Okay.
Those are very old laws, and they need to be revised. These are the laws that we're talking about that physics explains in their books that are rock solid. In other words, if you don't follow this law, you don't get any energy. Okay? Well, that's baloney. All right? That's just simple terms. If you violate the law and find a way to tap this field of energy, what you will get is acceleration and free energy by violating that law. Do you understand that?
I understand what you're saying. Now, one thing that I like to also know is, what is that space-time terminology that has been used during this show? How is it related to the system of generating electricity here?
I'm glad you asked that question, Risa, because it's a difficult one for us to comprehend, those of us that are not physicists. Whenever you are bending space-time, Tom uses that a lot, and he's explained it here before. Tom, you want to try it again?
it's really a fairly simple term. If you look at vacuum, which is space-time, as an ether of the new type that we talked about a while ago, if you will consider a rough analogy that the vacuum already has a pressure of this virtual gas that it is, that pressure would be the potential. The swirl in that would be, for example, the magnetostatic potential. But if you make waves in this potential, one wave that will go up in a peak, and that is more density of this virtual gas. Now, I'm using an analogy here. In the trough of the wave, it's less density or less intensity of the flux, less intensity in the virtual pressure. So if you look at it as a sort of a crazy pressure wave, what you have is the pressure, so to speak, in this crazy vacuum going up and going down, pulsating. Now, that's a scalar wave. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. What we've done is pointed out that electromagnetics itself, the present one taught in the books, has some severe shortcomings that were just misses or best guesses 100 years ago or so when they put that stuff together. And nobody's ever gone back and dug those out and corrected them for what we know today. We've learned a lot about physics since then. And if you do, you get a much more extended electromagnetics, which I've been calling scalar electromagnetics. That's where the terminology is coming from. So what we've been doing is building a bridge, just like you went from Newtonian physics to relativistic physics when Einstein came along. You got a little bit of an extension to it. The electromagnetics has the same kind of an extension that can be done, and that's what John's working in. He's working in the extended electromagnetics, which includes what you got in the book and a lot more.
Does that help you now, Reason?
Yes, it does.
I think, you know, one of the things I think we need to remember is that we talk about, and the scientists quite often talk about, are from the great citadels of learning. You'll hear, these are the laws of physics, as if the laws were handed down by the lawmaker, the creator of the universe. Well, he didn't give us those laws. There's no stone tablets that came off the mountain that are in the laws of physics. And quite often they just are inappropriate now, and it's time to change them all. And it's one thing to talk about it, but it's another thing to see a device and to see it work that is in violation of the laws of physics, which shows that they really aren't laws at all. They're just somebody's idea that no longer applies. You're on Open Mind tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins. We're talking about free energy. It may be a little bit technical for you from time to time, but I think it's well that you stay with us if you can, because it's going to directly change your life. Not just that. Hello, Craig. Hello there. Do I need to punch it again? Hello.
Can you hear me all right now?
There we go.
Good. Hi, Bill. Nice to have you back.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
We were a little worried about you last week. I was telling my wife, I thought, well, I wasn't sure what might have happened. Maybe you finally got out of body and couldn't come back.
It was about as bad, but I did make it back, and everything is under control, right?
Okay, I've got some questions, yeah. First, before my questions, just one small comment on the notion of violating the law of conservation of energy. I think, actually, we just have to redefine the parameters of that.
Well, that's one way to put it, a nice way to put it, yes.
Would you agree? Specifically, I'm talking to Tom Byrne right now.
Yes, if you include energy
in the virtual state.
In the virtual state, that's true. You don't violate the overall conservation of energy of the universe. You violate it locally.
Yeah, I think that concept would go down a lot better with physicists and other people.
Well, it goes a little further than that. You see, number one, we're not too interested in how well we go down. We gave that up a long time ago. I don't mean to be flippant with that at all. And I certainly have great respect for the hard work that the physicists are doing and have done. I'm just saying that we must not ever become dogmatic in physics, and we must never say, this cannot be done. Usually when that statement is made, it's usually done very shortly thereafter. Otherwise, we get like some of the people were at the beginning of the atomic bomb. We say, you know, the thing will never work. Well, it did work. The business of energy itself is presently a concept which is misused in physics. It's used in two fashions that are diametrically opposed to each other, and the difference between the two has not been recognized. Now, there is a technical difference between those ways it's used. It should be used rigorously only when you ultimately refer to a single force vector moving against a resisting mass. It has been used, for example, with a potential, where you have many vectors essentially summing to vector zero. It does not rigorously apply to that case. A potential has no energy. It has energy which has turned into a different form, just like mass is energy in a different form. And that should be clearly differentiated in physics, and it is not. So for that reason, the word conservation of energy, as a matter of fact, we've written a new conservation law. We've created a term for the multi-vector system, the zero-vector system that consists of a whole bunch of vectors. We call that an-energy to make it technically correct.
You call it what?
An-energy. Not energy, but you can get energy from it.
Mm-hmm.
And we've written a law directly with that, which the present conservation of energy is a special case, just exactly like you do when you go from Newtonian physics to relativistic physics.
Right.
It has to fade back into the old physics in the limit. And that's the way this thing works. But you can get around the present conservation of energy law when you look at what you've got available from the potentials, that is, from the vacuum.
Yeah, I think you just made it real clear to people who might be resisting the concept.
Yeah, we're not intending to imply that you get something which appears out of nowhere and never was existing anywhere else. So the universe is literally filled with enormous amounts of energy and this new form of it, if you will permit that expression, in even the smallest part, even in 1 cubic centimeter. There's just enormous amounts in there if we can transform it into usable energy that we can use. And, of course, that's been in physics a long time.
How does this work into the concept of the Big Bang? Has anybody done work on it?
The Big Bang?
Yeah.
I've not done any work at all on that.
I mean, you know, the theoretical physicists go through all the calculations of what happened in the first microsecond and, you know, where the energy came from and all that. But if we're going to include the concept of the scalar wave energy, doesn't it have to be revised?
Well, Professor Ramon Sanchez is here, and his eyes lit up at that question, Craig, so let's let him go on it.
Well, non-physical forces, of course, are behind all the physical forces that we have in the universe. Fields, of course, affect matter. You have a magnet that has a field that you cannot see, you cannot taste. But in your interaction between two fields, you have a force, which is a vector force. Now, before the Big Bang, there was a non-physical energy, call it scalar or whatever. Now, that created a phase 90 degrees to that energy and created an explosion, if you believe the Big Bang. I think that the expansion was detected as a glow. And this glow is prevalent around the Earth's atmosphere. And part of that makes up what we call now the Van Allen radiation belt. You see, besides radioactivity and high levels of background radiation, you have scalar waves, and they originate from the point of the explosion that are still traveling and still expanding. Now, they still have to phase couple to create energy, so you have suns forming and things like that. You have the sun emitting regular electromagnetic energy, and you have scalar radiation from the sun. To prove that point, if you have a space probe just above the Earth's atmosphere, you will detect 10 milliwatts per square centimeter. But on the surface of the Earth, it's 14 milliwatts per square centimeter. So there's an increase. That increase is due to scalar in, going into a coupling effect.
On this figure, are you talking across all bandwidths?
Yes, the scalar bandwidth has its own spectrum. I did experiments showing that scalar radiation can be reflected. And if you take a prism, the rays will reflect in the material. Let's say you have a piece of glass. That in physics is called refraction. Now that bending changes with the bandwidth. The lower bandwidth will bend the least and have less energy. The higher the bandwidth will bend the most, having more energy. That separates the bands, and you have a scalar spectrum. So it includes all bands, yes.
Hmm. Okay, what about specifically reworking the calculations for the Big Bang theory? Has anybody worked on it?
Well, yeah, they're constantly debating and going at each other's throats. To this day, the controversy hasn't ceased. And even in philosophy, you have the Indian philosophy, you probably know of the yoga, and you have the creationalists. Now, the yoga says that the Earth is a creation of a Big Bang explosion, creating the whole universe that ends. In other words, there's an ending. And the creationalists, which means the people that study the Bible, the Judeo-Christian tradition believes that the universe will never end and will continue to expand, creating more and more. Now, there's two camps of scientists. Some believe that the universe will stop, and of course, the proton, as we know it, will decay. There's some evidence to that effect, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not recreated. I believe that in scalar fields, and there's been some evidence that light has formed into matter at extreme distances from the Earth, next to the edge of the known universe. So that would good evidence for scalar interference, even creating matter. And if light actually light is the process where matter is created. Now, The answer to your question is that there's two camps of scientists. One believe that the end of the universe is at hand, and the other believes that the universe will slow down and stop altogether because it's closed, and the other believes that energy is constantly being created. Now, Albert Einstein was in, he thought that the universe would continuously expand, and that there was only a change of energy, only in form. And he developed the wormhole theory, which is now the black hole theory, where you have black holes and white holes, where it enters into another dimension or hyperspace and into a other universe. Or a white hole is becoming in our universe energy. Now, that's general relativity. Now, we can do this on a laboratory bench and change that. I've done experiments where I can essentially produce a black hole or a white hole, creating a hot spot or a cold spot where energy sinks back into the surrounding universe. Now, any scientist that doesn't believe that is because...